Hey, Randy, you look a bit different today.
Really? Is it my new glasses?
No, I think it's something else. Have you grown?
Oh, God, not intentionally, but my son has gotten into baking lately and he wants to make cookies all the time. It's kind of a bad kind of growth hack for me.
Oh, that must be it. It's like horizontal growth. Ugh. You know, I know someone who knows all about, not the opposite of that, but a different version of growth, moving hyper fast and building and growing product teams along the way. So let's chat to her about that, because that must be pretty challenging.
Yeah, this week we chat to Lucy Buisson. She's the Chief Product Officer at Content Square, and we talked to her about building great products and product teams quickly. There were so many quote-worthy moments in this episode. It's full of great tips, whether you're leading a team or just part of a team.
This was absolutely great. So let's get straight to the chat.
The Product Experience is brought to you by Mind the Product. Every week on the podcast, we talk to the best product people from around the globe.
Visit mindtheproduct.com to catch up on past episodes and discover loads of free resources to help you with your product practice. You can also find more information about Mind the Product's conferences and their great training opportunities happening around the world and online.
Create a free account on the website for a fully personalized experience and to get access to the full library of awesome content and the weekly curated newsletter. Mind the Product also offers free Product Tank meetups in more than 200 cities. There's probably one near you.
Lucy, welcome to the Product Experience podcast. It's so great to be talking to you today.
Thank you so much.
So before we get started on our topic, I'd love for you to give us a quick intro to who you are and what you do in product and a little bit of your background of how you got into product.
Sure. So I'm the Chief Product Officer at Content Square. Content Square is an experience analytics platform where you can analyze the behavior of your customer on your website and on your app to better understand like what they like and what they dislike about the digital experience. And I've been with the company for 9 years now. And when I started, it was 10 people in a very small apartment in France. I'm sure you can hear that my background is in France. And now it's a company of almost 2,000 people, you know, so it's been an amazing adventure going through the year. And I moved to the US 5 years ago to make sure that our product vision and product strategy were aligned with the need of the US market, because the US is our primary market. So that's it, I would say, about me. And how I came into product management is actually a pretty good story. So when I started at Content Square 9 years ago, when it was a very small company, I was on the customer success side. And they were just releasing the first version of the product for customer to use it, because the very early days of Content Square was more consulting. So we were using our own data and on product, but on behalf of customer. And when I started was the moment where they were just releasing the first platform where customer could be self-serve. And I went to train our first customer, loved it. And then our chief technical officer convinced our CEO they needed a product person. And the funny story is that they hired someone. This person came one day, didn't come back the second day because she had 2 job offers and they didn't want to go back to an interview process. And so they offered me the job, but that was crazy, you know, because I had no engineering background. I've done a business school. And I had no experience in product whatsoever. My only experience was to work with customer. But they said that being able to work with customer and care about customer was a good skill enough. So they offered me the job and I said yes. And 9 years later, I'm still leading the product team.
That's amazing. So have you always been in charge of the product team throughout that whole journey?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. So And tell us a little bit about that experience as well, because that's kind of the topic of today, is what it's like to scale a product team through an enormous amount of growth over a relatively short period of time. So what have been like the biggest problems in scaling your team through that journey?
Yeah, maybe I can give you some numbers so we know what we are talking about. Like, so when we started the product team, when they gave me that mission, we were four in the product team. It was me. It was an experienced product manager. And when I say experience, it was 5 years, but you know, 9 years ago, five years was a lot of experience in product management. It was a designer and a product knowledge manager. That then transformed more into product marketing. But at that time, we were more talking about product knowledge. And now we are like close to 100 in the product team. So gives you an idea of how big the team has grown. I would say at that time, the engineering team was maybe 10 or 15 people. And now we are closer to 350. So also give you an idea of the size of the team.
Amazing.
I would say that the biggest problem we've been through is that it's like you go through so many different phases and you need to embark your people into a very different mission and very different challenge. You know, like at the very beginning, it was just about having a first product that customer can use. So we were basically, our job was to understand what the consulting team was doing with customer or for customer and try to bring that within the product. So I would say that for the first year, it was a lot of feature development. But then we started to have much more customer, you know, we went from maybe 5 using the platform self-service to 50. And now this is when you start having scalability issue, right? And you need to make sure that everything you build is much more scalable, that your data infrastructure is going to be able to do 10x and then like 100x. So you go into a period of time where you are developing less new feature and you are doing more stabilization and quality. You know, your focus over quality change a lot because you are not a very small startup in the garage and you are now an established company. And then I would say you need to go back to innovation fast enough, because if you invest too much in quality and in scale, then you lose your ability to really create value for customer, right? But if you don't invest enough in scale and quality, you're not creating any value for your customer because they're not able to use your product, you know? So I think this has been a bit the tension in the product team. But now we are like very lucky because we have a quite big team. So we are able to work on both a big technical project, you know, to prepare the future, but at the same time, develop value for our customer.
Lucy, is this a cycle you went through just once, or is this something you go through again and again as you roll out new things and have to scale them up?
Again and again and again. I think we talked about that before the podcast, but for me, the biggest aha or revelation of scaling the team was to realize that your team is, you have to think about your team like you think about your product, you know? So you are on a journey, you have a vision, but you need to constantly improve and change the way you work, the same way that you are constantly improving and changing your product, you know? And so you always have to focus about the needs, the pain, and the desire of your organization in order to put in place the right team, the right role, and the right roadmap. So I would say that you're never done, you know, with a product team. Like it's a constant evolution, but it's also what makes it like very interesting and what I'm passionate about.
It's one of those things when you're in the middle of that growth, you're constantly fighting fires, you're dealing with all kinds of things. Was there a moment when you stepped back and realized, oh, it's, if I delegate things, if I have enough people, if I have a team that's strong enough, then this will be easier for me and for them. Was there something specific that happened?
I think for me, if I'm being completely honest, I was not very into management in the first place. And maybe it's also because I'm quite young, you know, like, and they gave me this responsibility to be the head of product when I was just out of school, you know. So I was more into doing things myself rather than like empowering other people, I would say. And our chief revenue officer, Pierre, who has been a great mentor to me, gave me a sentence, and I say gave because it's been really a gift for me, which is, alone you go faster, but together we go further. And I think this sentence has been so important for me, you know, to learn how to slow down a little bit in order to embark more people with you, take the time to onboard them, take the time to create the right environment for them to be successful. And at first, okay, you're going less fast because you are not alone in your head. But in the end, you go much further and you achieve much bigger stuff because you are not alone, you know, to achieve all those things.
And one of the other things I think you mentioned as well is trying to build teams that you think can do it better than you, or that can do it better than you. What's your experience been like of that? How have you found those people or judged that they're going to be able to do it better than you?
Yeah, and it's a question that people ask me very often, you know, again, because of my age, like how Content Square is almost my first experience, you know. Before that, I've done like internships and stuff like this, but it's my first real job. And I think being like, I've learned so much from my teams, you know. So I think for me, I think what is super important when you are a leader is to never feel threatened by someone that has more experience than you do, you know? And I think it's the opposite. The more experienced people you can bring to your team, and the better leader you can be, and also the better scope and the better autonomy and empowerment you can give them, you know? So it's going to decrease your workload. And really like scale up your team. And especially when you are in this kind of scaling moments, you know, you always have to think, you know, when you hire someone that is going to be the lead of a team of 5 product managers, you have to think that at some point, this team is going to be a team of 20 product managers. So you need to hire the right person for the next 2 years. And if you plan on doubling the size of the team every 2 years, you need to hire people that can handle a 2x or a 4x team, you know? And I think this is super important when you are in a scale motion, because if you hire the right person for right now, in 6 months or 1 year, you're going to have to change your leader. And when you go through scale, there are so many things that need to change that changing leader all the time is not going to help.
Is there a secret you have to knowing that that person is someone who's ready to scale, ready to change, who's going to be the right person for 6 months or a year from now?
You know, it's going to be really weird to say that when you work for a data company, but I think it's a lot about intuition. I think at the end of the day, like managing is a people business, you know, so you can have all your criteria. When I hire for a leadership position, I always have like 4 or 5 criteria that are super important, and I always evaluate candidates against those criteria. But the best hire I had in my team are people where I was happy to call them back, or I was happy to spend another hour with them. You know, the conversation was fluid and we understood each other and we were looking forward to the next conversation. So I think it's super important to check the hard skill, but you also have to check that you're going to be willing to work with this person. And then you need to find a good mix between experienced people coming from outside, you know, that can bring you that scale because they've done it. They have managed a team of 10 or a team of 20. They have managed a multi-product strategy when you're trying to go multi-product. And you have to balance that with investing time and energy into the people that are already inside the organization that don't have this kind of experience of the scale, but they know your culture, they know your products, and they know how you operate, you know? And I think being able to balance those two things is super important.
Randy, what's the most effective way to learn from the best in the industry, connect with other PMs, and sharpen your skills?
Why, Lily, you must be talking about MTPCon London, happening this year on the 20th of October.
You know it, and this year's lineup of speakers is shaping up nicely. We have Tim Harford, behavioral economist, award-winning Financial Times columnist, data detective, and BBC broadcaster. That's all of those things, it's just Tim. Plus, the legend, that is Mark Abraham, product director at Backbase.
There's also Randy Psidu, who's the former CPO at Reliance Health, and Claire Woodcock, who's the director of product for machine learning at Mozilla, and many more, including a great friend of this podcast.
That's right. And don't forget Workshop Day. On the 19th of October, there are 7 full-day in-person workshops led by experienced product managers who share their secrets and tips for success.
And finally, there's the Leadership Forum, an exclusive event for senior product leaders with carefully curated speakers, guests, and delicious food.
So grab your tickets for MTPCon London today at mindtheproduct.com/London. I'm curious as well, because quite often when a company does a big fundraise, sometimes what I've seen happen is they'll just go, okay, we know we need to expand the team. We're just going to hire 10 or 20 product people. It feels from the outside like that's not particularly considered and they're just looking for people, and then get those people on board, shuffle them around, see if they fit or where they fit, and then, you know, let the ones go who don't quite fit the puzzle. Have you had any experience of that kind of hiring, or have you always hired with like an intention of, I'm hiring this person to do this particular job in the product team?
I think it's a very good question. And I think we always tried to first create the product strategy and then hire product manager. But even if you do that, it's really, really tough, you know? And we went from 5 people total in the product team to then 10, to then 20, to then 40, to then 80. And each time it was 1 year, you know? So when we went from 40 people to 80 people in the product team, that was really crazy. Because even if we were intentional about the role we wanted to hire, you know, we were adding product marketing, program manager, product analyst to support the product team. And we were intentional about, okay, your mission is going to be to develop this kind of value for customer or this kind of new product. So we were really trying to be intentional. But when you have 40 people to hire and then 40 people to onboard, you spend so much time hiring and onboarding that you have way less time to develop your people. And for me, that was the biggest struggle and the biggest challenge of going through such a big growth, is that, you know, it's like what we say to our customer, that they need to focus less on acquisition and they need to focus more on retention on their website and on their apps. And for us, it was the same issue. You know, we were focusing so much on hiring the right people, then we were not investing enough into developing them and making sure they were set for success, you know? So I don't have a magic recipe for that, but I think it's definitely something to watch out when you grow that fast.
So one of the things when you're setting people up for success, I believe you're a strong proponent of creating empowered teams. How do you set that up? How do you make sure that when you're hiring so fast, that the teams actually have the power and have the context to do the job that they need to do?
Yeah, and you're right. I think this is the hardest thing, because for me, empowerment comes after having the right knowledge. You know, there is no way that the sales team, the CEO, the investor are going to trust a product manager or product trio that is not knowledgeable. What I always tell to the team is John. So John is our CEO and founder. Is going to trust you to run the product team if he's learning at least two or three things every time he's speaking to you. If he feels that he has a better knowledge of the customer than you do, he's not going to trust you, and he's right, you know. How can you make the right decision on the product if you know less than he does, you know? So you cannot fight against your CEO giving you a list of features to develop if the CEO feels he knows the customer better than you. And so when you are hiring that many people and you have so many new people, it's really a challenge to make sure that your team on their scope is more knowledgeable than the CEO. So what we try to do is to hire people from a customer success and sales team. Because, and here again, going after this balance, you know, of bringing experienced product manager from the outside and bringing extremely knowledgeable people from the inside. So we went after the solution engineering team, so the pre-sales, you know, from the sales team, and what we call the solution experts, which are a group in the customer success that is in charge of onboarding and value for customer. Because, you know, they demo the product, they do POCs, they do onboarding every day. So they know our customer in and out, you know, and then try to get those people to learn the product management side and product management to learn the customer side.
So is that a career track that you still use today?
Yes, definitely. And like, the sales engineer leader and the customer success leader, they kind of hate me a little bit for that, you know, because they have like amazing talents moving to product. But I think in the end, it's a win-win, you know, like gives great product career paths for people that want to join product, because it's always hard to get your first chance as a product manager. And on the other hand, it's bringing a ton of knowledge and they make sure that they have a voice into the product team also doing that, you know?
You mentioned earlier that you went from having a few product managers to bringing in product marketing and product ops and things like that. How did you bring in these new functions without impacting the way the team worked? Or was it just that it was getting creaky and you needed to start shoring things up?
Yeah, so it's also a very good question. I think, you know, too many cook in the kitchen and the broth is spoiled. So I think you have to be very, very careful about bringing new roles, and you have to do it only when it's mandatory. So, you know, going back to what we were saying about, your team is your product. I think you need to analyze what are the strengths and the weaknesses of your team, and you need to bring in product marketing and product analyst and product ops only when it's a critical need of your team. It's like, you know, if in your product you're adding those new features because they are fancy and they are nice to have, they're just going to make your product too busy and too complex. If now you are bringing feature because they are a must-have for your customer, they are really here to solve a massive pain, or they are really here to create more efficiency, then you are making your product better. So I think when you think about building your team, it's exactly the same thing. If you feel that you have become too siloed and you need like the team to work together better, bring in program manager. If you are like a high touch model like us with sales, you're going to have to bring in product marketing for sure, because you need someone to enable the sales team. If the product manager are under the water and they don't have time to work enough with the data, bring in product analysts. But if your product manager are on top of the data, let them be on top of the data. You see what I mean?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And one of the other things that I think was one of your kind of key learnings from your experience was kind of keeping those close relationships with customers as the business grows. Has that been a particular challenge that you've had to like really definitely focus on? And I'm also curious to know, is that something that you yourself do, or do you kind of keep close to your customer, which is the product team? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I do both, actually. So maybe I have to go back in time to give you a little bit more context. At the very beginning of the product team, we were in charge of building the product, but we were also in charge of onboarding the first self-service customer. So I think this was amazing. And I think maybe this is one of the key reasons of the success of Content Square, because at least we were spending at least 3 or 4 half day with customer at the beginning, and we were training them on how to use the product, you know? So there was like no ivory tower, you know? We were on the ground every day trying to explain to customer how to use the product. So if something was complex or hard to use or pointless, we would face that right away. And the other way around, you know, when we were like releasing a great feature, we could feel it. And then we went to this phase that I was describing. First of all, we had so many self-service customers that customer success started to look after them, which is a normal path, you know. So that created a bit more distance between customer and us. And then we were investing a lot of time into bringing more quality into the product. So I think at some point we kind of lost a little bit the contact, the natural contact with our customer. Plus COVID happened, so it was harder to get with customer because we had ritual to be in person with customer, and on Zoom it was not the same. So I would say that at some point we almost lost contact with customer, and we had to rebuild that. And so now we have different things to do that, but we have a community of users, and every product manager has a top 5 or top 10 user of their feature, and they have a relationship with those customers, so it's easy for them to reach out to those customers. And then we also are training our product manager and product leader to be the voice of the product. So they know how to pitch the vision and the strategy. So sales and customer success bring you in customer meetings to present. And then customers are going to say, oh, I love this feature. And then you can do another interview with them, you know. So we're really trying to like take every opportunity to talk to customer. And it's an OKR that each a trio has to meet at least once a week with a customer. And to go back to your question, I'm trying to do both. I'm trying to spend as much time as possible with the product manager because they are my customer, you know, but also with customer, because I think now as a chief product officer, my job is to build the team. So, and to bring those empowered team to deliver on our vision, but also to bring the vision. And you cannot bring the vision if you don't talk to customer. So I'm trying to speak with customer also every week. And we have a customer advisory board also to do that. And I try to apply to myself the same advice. And I want to make sure I'm more knowledgeable than our CEO on the product vision, you know?
Lucy, I want to change the subject a little bit. I was doing my research ahead of this, and I found, you know, we talk about animals and wildlife and product management all the time. We talk about hippos, we talk about seagulls, but at Content Square, you have a rhino. Can you tell us what the rhino is?
Yeah. So the rhino is kind of the totem animal of Content Square, and we came up with that like when we were about to become a unicorn. And John, again, our CEO was like, yeah, but like a unicorn doesn't exist, and they only have one horn, when rhino actually exists and they have 2 horns. So it has become a bit of the symbol of where there is a will, there is a way. And which is also very dear to John. And we also use the rhino for a lot of things, but for us, it's the rhino methodology. It's the way we work within the product team. And it's inspired by great books and great thinking, like talked a lot. We talked all the time about Teresa Torres and Marty Kagan, but we call it a rhino because we want to make sure that we bring in what is really needed. And going back to what's nice to have and what is must have for the organization, what we want to say is we don't do that just because Teresa Torres says is the right thing to do. We do that because it's actually helping us solving one of the issue we had in the way we were doing discovery. So it's our way to make sure that the way we work is the best fit for our needs, our organization, and our culture.
That's amazing. I love that. Two-horned rhino. So one of the other things I think you mentioned as well was an important learning was keeping the fun and like an innovation mindset. So I'd love to hear how you've managed to keep the fun through what must have been like quite a full-on stressful at times potentially period.
Yeah. You know, like, the workout play hard is like, is also something we do a lot at Content Square. So it's a lot of work, but, we also make sure that we celebrate success, with the team. Because when you are in this, hyper growth mode, it's very easy to forget about the milestone and the success. Because you always have something bigger to achieve or you always have a new challenge that you need to focus on. And I think what is draining for the team is when they jump into the next challenge without acknowledging that they already solved the past challenge, you know? So I think the play hard for us is more like to make sure we are celebrating every milestone and we are recognizing that wow, that was a massive challenge. We fixed it. It's amazing. Congratulations to everybody involved. Let's embrace the new one. And when we're going to start embracing the new one, we feel much more confident because we know that we've been able to tackle the previous one. We've done a lot of acquisition, for instance, to give you a concrete example. We've done a lot of acquisition at Content Square. And it's super important for us to celebrate the end of the migration or the end of the integration to make sure that everybody realizes the amount of work we realized. So I think it was a year, almost a year ago, we brought the entire team, the entire product house team to the Parc Astérix, which is like an entertainment park in Paris for 2 days. Just to celebrate, you know, and just to say thank you to everybody. And I think those kind of moments are very important in the development of the team.
Lucy, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. It's been so great to hear about your experience building very high performing and huge product team at Content Square.
Thank you so much for having me and thank you for the great conversation.
The Product Experience is the first
and the best
podcast from Mind the Product. Our hosts are me, Lily Smith,
and me, Randy Silver.
Luron Pratt is our producer and Luke Smith is our editor.
Our theme music is from Hamburg-based band POW, that's P-A-U. Thanks to Arnie Kittler, who curates both Product Tank and MTP Engage in Hamburg, and who also plays bass in the band, for letting us use their music. You can connect with your local product community via Product Tank, regular free meetups in over 200 cities worldwide.
If there's not one near you, maybe you should think about starting one. To find out more, go to mindtheproduct.com/product tank.